Hello, I'm Virginia Voice volunteer Gretchen Simpson Nelson, and welcome to the Heritage News Review. We'll begin today's program with an article from the newjournalandguide.com. Virginia political leaders to keynote speeches at most area 2026 HBCU commencements. By staff writer. Students graduating in May from all but two of Virginia's historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs, will hear speeches from some of the Commonwealth's high-profile political leaders during their upcoming commencement activities. Here are the commencement speakers who will address graduates at area HBCUs listed in alphabetical order. At Hampton University, Congressman Bobby Scott will deliver the keynote address on Friday, May 8th at 10 a.m. at the Hampton Coliseum. At Norfolk State University, Virginia Attorney General Jay Jones will deliver the keynote address to nearly 600 graduates on May 9 at 9 a.m. at William Dick Price Stadium. At Virginia State University, Governor Abigail Spanberger and Virginia Attorney General Jay Jones will deliver the keynote address at two graduation ceremonies on Saturday, May 16 at the VSU Multipurpose Center. The governor will deliver the keynote address at Virginia State's first commencement ceremony, which will begin with a processional at 1:30 p.m. The ceremony will celebrate graduates from the College of Education and the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. The Attorney General will speak at Virginia State's second ceremony at 5:30 p.m. The second ceremony will celebrate graduates from the College of Agriculture, the College of Engineering and Technology, the College of Natural and Health Sciences, and the Reginald F. Lewis College of Business. Both ceremonies will be held in the VSU Multipurpose Center. In Richmond, at Virginia Union University, a Morehouse professor and a Nigerian ambassador will deliver keynote speeches at 300 graduates on Saturday, May 9, at 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. The two keynote speakers are Dr. Lawrence Edward Carter Sr., a former Morehouse dean and tenured professor. The second keynote speaker is Ambassador Abubakar Jida, Consul General to the Federal Republic of Nigeria in New York. Virginia Union will also award honorary doctorates to Virginia Congresswoman Jennifer McClellan, 4th District, and the Reverend Dr. Boise Kimber, President of the National Baptist Convention, USA. In Lynchburg, for the University of Lynchburg's 2026 commencement ceremonies, Dr. John Garrison Marks, Class of 2010, a historian and author of Thy Will Be Done, George Washington's Legacy of Slavery and the Fight for American Memory, will be the keynote speaker. Undergraduate commencement will be held at 9 a.m. on Thursday, May 7, and the graduate ceremony will be held at 9 a.m. on Friday, May 8. Marks will speak at the undergraduate and graduate ceremonies, both of which will be held on Schellenberger Field. Marks graduated from Lynchburg in 2010 with a bachelor's degrees in history and Spanish and a minor in museum studies. He also was a Westover Honors Fellow. He has a master's degree and Ph.D., both in history, from Rice University. Virginia political leaders to keynote speeches at most area 2026 HBCU commencements. Continuing in the newjournalandguide.com, local news in Virginia, Suffolk Housing Symposium will confront rising costs, ownership, and affordability gaps. NJG Newswire. Confronting the affordable housing crisis in Virginia is the focus of two upcoming events in May designed to highlight and offer solutions to the escalating problem. In Suffolk, on Friday, May 22nd, the Virginia Housing and Community Development Corporation, VHCDC, will host the 2026 Hampton Roads Housing Symposium at the Suffolk Center for Cultural Arts from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. This event arrives at a critical moment as Hampton Roads continues to face rising home prices, limited inventory, and growing affordability challenges for first-time buyers, working families, seniors, and residents on fixed incomes. Further north, near Richmond, the Virginia State Conference, NAACP, will host a 2026 Housing Justice Conference a day earlier on Thursday, May 21, from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. in Glen Allen, Virginia. James Taylor of the Virginia Housing and Community Development Corporation, VHCDC, in Suffolk, said Hampton Roads is facing one of the most challenging housing markets in decades. His event will bring together leading experts to address rising housing costs, limited inventory, and the growing affordability gap affecting families across the region. The event agenda includes mortgage lending, credit readiness for first-time buyers, down payment assistance program, wealth building through home ownership, fair housing and consumer protection, among other topics offering practical, actionable guidance for both consumers and industry professionals. The symposium will provide a platform for coordinated action, bringing together lenders, realtors, housing counselors, nonprofits, and policymakers to address affordability, access, and long-term community stability. VHCDC leadership emphasized that affordable homeownership remains one of the most powerful tools for building generational wealth, and this year's symposium is designed to equip residents with the knowledge and resources needed to navigate a rapidly changing housing landscape. The Suffolk event is open to first-time homebuyers, real estate professionals, community organizations, and anyone committed to strengthening housing opportunities in Hampton Roads. Suffolk Housing Symposium will confront rising costs, ownership, and affordability gaps, NJG Newswire. Continuing news from the New Journal and Guide. Intimate partner violence and firearm-related harm is a public health crisis. National Medical Association issues statement on recent nationwide tragedies. Washington, D.C. staff. The tragic killing of 8 children in Shreveport, Louisiana, by their father is a devastating reminder of the deadly intersection of domestic violence and firearm access. This unimaginable loss comes amid a troubling rise in intimate partner violence across the country, including the recent deaths of Serena Fairfax, Virginia, Nancy Metter Bowen, Florida, and Ashley Janey, Florida. The National Medical Association, NMA, has long recognized gun violence as a public health crisis, particularly within the context of intimate partner violence. Black women are disproportionately impacted, with intimate partner violence remaining one of the most pressing threats to their health and safety. Firearms are used in more than half of intimate partner homicides. Ensuring that individuals with a history of domestic violence are prohibited from accessing firearms and that those weapons are removed is essential to preventing further loss of life. Domestic violence protection orders must be consistently enforced. We are witnessing the devastating health consequences of intimate partner violence compounded by easy access to firearms, said Dr. Roger A. Mitchell, Jr., president of the NMA. These situations too often escalate into preventable, lethal outcomes that devastate families and communities. Preventing individuals who pose a risk from obtaining and keeping firearms is a critical public health intervention and an essential step in protecting families, safeguarding communities, and saving lives. Intimate partner violence and firearm access together create a predictable and preventable pathway to lethal outcomes, said Dr. Michael McGee, chair of the NMA Violence Prevention Council. As physicians, we see the health consequences of this intersection far too often. Strengthening prevention strategies, ensuring effective enforcement of protection orders, and integrating firearm safety into clinical care are essential steps to protecting families, patients, and communities. Physicians play a critical role in prevention. As trusted voices, the NMA believes physicians must engage patients in conversations about safe firearm storage, recognize the signs of abuse, conduct routine screening, and apply trauma-informed care to support those experiencing violence. Building trust in clinical settings is key to helping patients feel safe enough to seek help. These tragedies demand more than acknowledgement. They require sustained action to protect vulnerable individuals and address domestic violence and gun violence as the urgent public health crises they are. Intimate partner violence and firearm-related harm is a public health crisis. National Medical Association issues statement on recent nationwide tragedies. Continuing in the new JournalandGuide.com. Justin Fairfax, His Fall from Grace, by Brenda H. Andrews. For many of us in the Black community, the fall from grace of Justin Fairfax has weighed heavily both collectively and individually as we have grieved the murder-suicide by his hands on Thursday morning, April 16. The topic of Justin and his wife, Serena, has come up everywhere we've assembled, including church, since Justin shot to death his talented and successful dentist wife, of 26 years, and then himself at their Northern Virginia home. In churches on Sunday, we lifted up prayers for the devastated family members, especially the two Fairfax children left behind, and in our circles, we keep retelling the story in disbelief that the unimaginable really happened. No, not Justin, not Serena. In the midst of this, many have expressed thankfulness that the lives of the children were spared in the unimaginable tragedy. Accounts in major media outlets offer the repeating details of how Justin, 47, and Sarita, 49, were involved in messy divorce proceedings. They had been estranged for 2 years, but shared the same house with their two children. In July 2025, Sarita filed for divorce. Just 2 weeks before the fatal shootings, Justin was ordered to move out of the house by April 30, with a judge also ordering him to be fined $300 for each day he continued not to comply with orders. He also was ordered to compensate Sarita for money he owed her, and he lost custody for their children. Court filings during the proceedings show that Justin was unemployed for some time, almost completely broke, drank heavily, and had withdrawn from the family, occupying his separate quarters in the house. A written opinion from Fairfax County Circuit Court Judge Timothy J. McAvoy described Dr. Sarita Fairfax as the family's primary breadwinner, calling her a port in a storm for her children. Patients from her dental practice have described her lovingly as warm and professional. A lengthy article in the Washington Post on April 18 included interviews with six of Justin's friends who reported they evidenced Justin's mental and emotional decline as his public and private worlds increasingly deteriorated in recent years. And though they encouraged him to seek professional counseling to help him pull himself together, he refused. While that decline worsened in recent months and his marriage unraveled and they worried what harm he might do to himself, they were stunned that he would kill his wife before taking his own life. One friend said Justin, at the time of his fatal actions, was utterly broke, having to rely on Wi-Fi at Panera's to file his court proceedings because he was locked out of the family's Wi-Fi and refrigerator, with Sarita keeping a small fridge in her bedroom. He was borrowing money from family and friends to pay for court pleadings and to put gas in the car borrowed from his mother that he drove. What triggered the final act of violence may never be known, but it is known Justin recently had been served paperwork associated with an upcoming court proceeding, which may have led to the shootings. Just 7 years ago, Justin Fairfax was on top of his world, jovial, popular, and respected, embraced especially by the Black community. As a former federal prosecutor and civil litigator, he was serving as the 41st Lieutenant Governor of Virginia from 2018 to 2022. He was the second African-American elected to the state house, and for a short time in 2019, he was poised to become governor when a scandal broke out involving sitting Governor Ralph Northam. Instead, Justin's political and law career took a sudden dive in 2019 when two women appeared with back-to-back previously unreported sexual assault allegations against him, dating to 2000 and 2004. Justin admitted the sexual encounters had occurred but called them consensual, as national media kept the stories alive in the public's eye. The allegations were never proven to be true and later lost the media's attention after Northam's scandal subsided and he continued in his seat. Nor were the allegations ever investigated by the FBI as Justin requested, nor was Justin ever charged in either case. Despite calls for him to resign, he served out the remainder of his term, but the women's charges proved effective in derailing Justin's career path and his earlier reputation never recovered, though his popularity in the Black community remained. The last years of his life, Justin spent obsessed over his derailment, friends say. For a period of time, he did some legal work after leaving public office, but also he spent time trying to keep public and media attention on the allegations to prove them wrong. Said a Post interviewee, he was still looking for justice, for vindication, and for somebody to hear him. In his poem Harlem, Langston Hughes asks what happens to a dream deferred. The imagery in the poem answers that it may dry up or fester, it may become passive, or it may lose its energy and purpose, essentially waste away, becoming a tainted version of its original self. His dream was to exonerate himself of the doubt cast upon his character, to prove to the world that he was not an imposter whose earlier excess was accidental or undeserved. It was a flawed dream that festered until it destroyed his sense of who he really had become. Paying attention to the importance of maintaining good mental health is as important as maintaining good dental health to keep your teeth intact and controlling your blood pressure and cholesterol to protect your heart from attacks. Yet when it comes to talking about maintaining and treating mental health, we slack off in America. The stigma of mental health disorder is still the order of the day too often. This needs to change. Many people have been affected by Justin's demons, especially by Dr. Serena Fairfax, who deserved to live out her own life, and the two young people who lost both parents. We all must learn to take better care of our whole selves, mind, body, and soul. This is a choice. This is a decision. This is especially true for African Americans in the public's eye, under scrutiny because of their value to bringing alive the dreams of our ancestors for our people. We cannot afford the consequences we may create when we deny the dream killer is real and works to steal, kill, or destroy our divine destiny. If you or someone you know needs help, visit 988lifeline.org, 988lifeline.org, or call or text the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. Justin Fairfax, His Fall from Grace, by publisher Brenda H. Andrews. National Commentary in the New Journal and Guide. Yusuf Jackson assumes command of Rainbow Push, but will he eclipse his dad's accomplishments? By Rosalind Tyler. By now you probably know that Jesse Jackson's son recently announced plans to take the helm at Rainbow Push, about 2 months after many prominent Democrats eulogized his father in February. But do you know the younger Jackson will have to steer the 55-year-old civil rights organization past roadblocks that his father encountered when he started Operation Push at the time when Richard Nixon was president? Later, the elder Jackson launched many successful economic boycotts in the 1980s during the Reagan era. What if the GOP is simply using an old, beat-up, and tattered playbook that has some people needlessly scratching their head in confusion? On April 9, Yusuf Jackson announced he would run Rainbow Push with his brother Jesse Jackson Jr., but are they assuming command at a time when it looks like history is repeating itself? The elder Jackson launched Operation Push, People United to Save Humanity, and the National Rainbow Coalition in 1971. The elder Jackson, who was eulogized February 25th to March 6th, 2026, across multiple cities including Chicago, South Carolina, and Washington, D.C., rolled up his sleeves and launched the Chicago-headquartered nonprofit during Nixon's first year in office. He began to launch economic boycotts after Ronald Reagan began his first term in 1980. GOP-launched parallels surface in news reports. Reagan, for example, advocated for radical tax-cutting programs that imposed major federal cutbacks in domestic spending. He endorsed large hikes in the military budget. On the stump, Reagan's 1980 campaign speeches advocated reviving the nation's free enterprise tradition, emphasizing how it had fueled prosperity before the Great Depression. He argued that the United States could regain its economic vitality by reducing government intervention and restoring confidence in the private sector. Sound familiar? Meanwhile, the 1981 Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act mandated budget cuts in the subsidized school lunch program during the Reagan era. It is impossible to overlook the similarities. The elder Jackson launched Rainbow Push at a time when federal cuts caused school lunch costs for low-income students to triple to 75 cents after Reagan assumed office, a situation that his son is facing today, in other words. Inflation is rampant. DEI programs are illegal. Gas prices are high. Gerrymandering efforts are widespread. Congress is locked in turmoil while federal cutbacks have substantially reduced free food, subsidy-sustained, and other low-cost food programs. Kids could be twitching in their seats because there's nothing in their bellies, Al Wood, director of the Los Angeles School Food Service Program, told UPI in an interview published December 19, 1981. During the Reagan era, 11% of American school children dropped out because lunch costs rose between 10 to 25 cents a day. Janice M. Oliver, vice president of the Kennedy School Parent Teacher Association, said in the Harvard Crimson, published February 9, 1982, 70 cents is a lot of money for a family to pay for each lunch, especially if there is more than one child in a family. Here's another parallel. Last year, Congress passed the 2025 Budget Reconciliation Bill, which threatens school meal access for students across the country. The Senate passed the measure with a 51-50 vote, with Vice President J.D. Vance acting as tiebreaker. The House passed the Senate version by a vote of 218 to 214, sending the legislation to President Trump's desk for his signature. In the new Trump era, fewer children are automatically eligible for free school meals, while families are also losing SNAP and Medicaid benefits. Other parallels include the Reagan administration proposing sharp slashes in federal aid to education. The Reagan administration sought and implemented budget reductions and new approaches for channeling federal funds to states, communities, students, and institutions of higher education. Yusuf Jackson said his father spent his last months urging him to mobilize churches to feed those who lost food assistance during a historic government shutdown, according to the Chicago Sun-Times. "I intend to die with my shoes on," he recalled his father saying. Yusuf Jackson ended his announcement by recalling his father's famous words, "Keep hope alive." The point is the younger Jackson is assuming the top role at Rainbow Push in the post-DEI era amid ongoing GOP efforts to reduce voting rights and at a time when federal cutbacks caused nearly 300,000 black women to lose their jobs. In 2025, the black female employment rate fell by 1.4 percentage points to 55.7%. Rainbow Push is also suffering from a bit of an identity crisis and has slipped in stature, journalist Roland Martin said in 2024. "Chicago is no longer the epicenter of the black community," Martin added. "Now the population has shifted to the Atlanta era." To eclipse his father's trailblazing accomplishments, the younger Jackson will have to confront modern-day realities that his father also faced in the 1970s and the 1980s. The elder Jackson unsuccessfully ran twice for the presidency in 1984 and 1988. Will his son build new bridges? When the elder Jackson said he was stepping down in 2023 as president of the Rainbow Push Coalition, news reports showed Vice President Kamala Harris sitting beside him holding his hand. Jackson introduced his successor, a popular Dallas minister named Frederick Douglass Haynes III. Haynes heads Friendship West Baptist Church in Dallas, a justice-focused church with more than 13,000 members. The church's resume shows it has fought economic predators in Texas, launched the Thrive Intern and Leadership Program, which employs nearly 100 young black males between the ages of 16 and 19, and has already donated $1 million to HBCUs. In 2016, Haynes was inducted into the International Civil Rights Walk of Fame. But Haynes quit. He left after less than 3 months without offering an explanation. On March 4, 2026, Haynes won the Democratic nomination for Texas's 30th Congressional District, a seat occupied by Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett, whose term officially ends on January 3, 2027. Yusuf Jackson assumes command of Rainbow Push, but will he eclipse his dad's accomplishments? By Rosalind Tyler. In Virginia News, from thelegacynewspaper.com, Newport News honored with National Budget Award, reinforcing commitment to transparency and strategic alignment, by administrative writer. The Government Finance Officers Association, GFOA, has once again recognized the City of Newport News with its Distinguished Budget Presentation Award for fiscal year 2026. This honor reflects the city's continued commitment to excellence in governmental budgeting and financial transparency. Newport News has received this prestigious award multiple times since 1989, underscoring a long-standing tradition of high-quality financial stewardship. City Manager Alan K. Archer formally recognized the budget department for this achievement during the recent City Council meeting, highlighting the team's dedication and the significance of the award at the national level. To earn the award, the city's budget document had to meet nationally recognized guidelines for effective budget presentation. These guidelines evaluate how well the budget functions as a policy document, a financial plan, an operations guide, and a communications tool. The GFOA requires that award recipients achieve a proficient rating in all four categories, as well as across 14 mandatory criteria. Newport News' fiscal year 2026 budget stood out for its strength in capital and debt management, as well as its effective use of charts and graphs to clearly present key financial and statistical information. The document also received special recognition for excellence as a communications tool, demonstrating accessibility and clarity for a broad audience. "Our budget director, Lisa Cipriano, and her team continue to set a high standard for excellence in public financial management," said City Manager Archer. "Their work reflects not only a deep commitment to transparency and integrity, but also a strong focus on strategic alignment, ensuring that our financial planning directly supports the City Council's priorities and the long-term vision for Newport News. This alignment allows us to allocate resources thoughtfully, respond to community needs, and position our city for sustained growth and resilience." Receiving this award again is a testament to their professionalism, innovation, and dedication to continuous improvement. More than 1,700 governments participate in the GFOA Budget Awards program. Award recipients demonstrate leadership in advancing the quality of budgeting and serve as a model for governments across North America. The GFOA supports excellence in government finance by providing best practices, professional development, resources, and research to more than 22,500 members and the communities they serve. Newper News honored with National Budget Award, reinforcing commitment to transparency and strategic alignment. News from the RoanokeTribune.org. Under the banner, What's Going On in and Around Black College Sports? Jay Butler, new WSSU hoops coach. After a national search, Winston-Salem State University named former Virginia Union head men's basketball coach Lester J. Butler as the Rams' new head coach Thursday, April 9. Butler, moving from one CIAA program to another, brings more than two decades of collegiate coaching experience, including 20 years as head coach of the NCAA Division II level, with a proven record of championship success, player development, and academic achievement. Butler's experience in the CIAA and Division II landscape positions him to build on WSSU's competitive tradition while advancing student-athlete success on and off the court. He is replacing Corey Thompson, who was let go before the end of the 2025-26 season after compiling a 12-37 record over two seasons. He was 7-15 in the 25-26 season. Most recently, Butler, a Washington, D.C. native, served as head men's basketball coach at Virginia Union, his alma mater, where he played under legendary head coach Dave Robbins. There he posted a 195-132 record, leading the program to two CIAA tournament championships and four NCAA tournament appearances during his 11-year tenure. Before VUU, Butler amassed a 177-107 mark during 11 seasons leading the University of the District of Columbia, UDC, winning two independent collegiate ICAA championships, one East Coast Conference championship, and an East Coast Conference regular season championship. Butler led the Firebirds to four NCAA championship appearances. He was inducted into the UDC Athletics Hall of Fame in 2019. His career includes 372-239 record, nine 20-win seasons, and eight NCAA Division II tournament appearances. This past season, Butler was named the CIAA Coach of the Year for the third time, and his team entered the CIAA Team High Academic Award. The Panthers finished 25-6 overall in second place in the CIAA North Division at 13-3 before bowing out in the quarterfinal round of the CIAA tournament in Baltimore. His Panthers went on to receive an at-large bid to the NCAA Division II Atlantic Region playoffs, where they defeated West Liberty in the first round before falling in overtime to Indiana, Pennsylvania in the region semifinals. In 2023, he was named HBCU Jerry Johnson NCAA Division II National Coach of the Year and NCAA Atlantic Region Co-Coach of the Year. He is a graduate of VUU with a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. As head coach, Butler will oversee all aspects of the men's basketball program, including recruiting, player development, academic progress, scheduling, and program operations. "I am honored to join Winston-Salem State University and lead this historic program," Butler said. "WSSU has a proud tradition, passionate supporters, and a strong commitment to student success. I look forward to building a championship culture that reflects the values of this university and prepares our student athletes for success on and off the court. I am deeply aware of the legacy that has been built here and that I am committed to honoring that tradition while building something this community is proud of for years to come." Under the banner, What's Going On in and Around Black College Sports? That's all the time we have today for this edition of the Heritage News Review. Thank you for joining us. I'm Gretchen Simpson-Nelson for the Virginia Voice. You can listen to this program on demand anytime at virginiavoice.org.